You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello and welcome to the
Noise Direction. Podcast.
We had a heart to heart.
We're
changing things. I'm Matt Bacon.
I'm Scotty Heath. We're your co-hosts.
He's also known as Scotty Tank Crimes. If you got this far in the show and like still haven't figured out who each of us is,
if you're from Y2K, it's Scotty Karate. So it's Y221 now. Whew, that's a long time. It's a long time to do this.
Yeah, man.
20 years is a long time to do this.
I finally reached the age where this band Kriegsdatern, who I was a fan of when I was in high school, and they were just starting out. They got a box set recently, and I was what the fuck? I'm old enough that bands who were starting when I was in high school now get box sets. That's upsetting.
There you are. And you're still a young man, Matthew.
I know, but it's scene elder shit.
A sprite.
A sprite.
Punk years are dog years. We had pre-taping. We discussed this a little bit, so that makes me 100. And then the other thing about old punks is you either disappear, worst case you die off, but really oftentimes you just disappear. But the punks that stick around really look good for their age. A lot of old punks really probably get that a lot. Oh shit, I didn't know you were 100 years old. You look no older than 70.
John Joseph is 58 and looks no older than 45. He'd be a rough 45.
Comparing a triathlete influencer to just your average 55-year-old punk.
John Joseph is a little different, libertarianism aside.
So I didn't want to I was feeling burnt out on the podcast, loyal listeners. I called Maddie this morning and had a heart to heart that, man, my heart hasn't been in the last couple episodes. And a lot of us, our fly off the cuff stuff is great, but I felt like, I don't know. And this is not an affront to Maddie, who obviously I love what he does. And that's why we do this podcast together. But I never really wanted to do 30-minute bacon bits. And Maddie already has his own thing with bacon bits. And I know you guys love him. I watch every goddamn one of them, even when he repeats himself. But I never wanted this podcast to be a 30-minute bacon bit with a co-host, And I don't think we started off that way. But I think, and maybe just me not being as creative with ideas, and really, I've said this before, is that Maddie's really the producer of this podcast, and maybe I just wait till he sends me a Zoom link to even think about the podcast, and I don't want to do that. And also, the weekly podcast I like because it keeps everyone engaged, but it's difficult for me to keep hyping it every week. Maddie, it's part of Maddie's schedule to have something to hype every morning when he wakes up, every afternoon after he eats lunch, after he takes his afternoon nap, after he smokes 2 cigars. That's his wiring. He's great.
Is that how much you think I smoke?
2 cigars. I smoke 2 cigars, and I smoke 2 cigars, and then I smoke 2 more. So I guess there's not really a story there, but then me and Maddie as friends ended up chatting for the last hour. And I said, well, fuck it. Hit record, bro. Let's do this podcast. I'm back in the game.
But the idea was early on, a lot of you guys really loved the more conversational aspects and the storytelling and the dumb
we got
stuff.
A lot of great comments about that. And we promised not to get away from it. And I think
and we did.
In the not planning the topics. And like I said, it wasn't when I say Maddie, what's the topic? I mean, he's good at what he does. I mean, when we pick a topic, sometimes we're looking at the metrics of the last 10 bacon bits and stuff like that, which is really another thing I'd lean back on Maddie to do for the podcast is bring us that. But we did get away from some of the stories and stuff like that. And I don't want to, And I always promised you guys that I have none of the answers. I just have a lot of ideas. And the ideas go with the stories. And I think what actually makes my advice more palatable is when we talk about some of my experience that I think is why I feel comfortable giving that advice. And all that experience is literally getting in the van or putting up my own money to put out a record and stuff like that. And so, and a lot of the stories go in that, and just the way music has influenced my life into being this old punk, you know, and what came along the way. So, all that said, Maddie was like, dude, why don't I just hit record and we just talk about music for a little bit? We're only episodes are 30 minutes. We could just have a quick conversation about some other stuff and see how people like it. And, honestly, I that really just kind of warmed my heart. And I was like, yeah, you're right. This is exactly why we do this and what it means. And Maddie reminding me that, you know, there's a handful of you guys we hear from every single week with your feedback, which I appreciate the hell out of. And then when we get a new person or a random comment about it, or somebody hits me up in a, if I actually see your DM out of my request folder in Instagram, which is a fucking nightmare, I goddamn love it. It's perfect. It brings us back. And I want everyone to succeed and follow your dreams and do it with all the love in your heart and integrity, which is a virtue that you grow and work towards, like happiness. So, whoo, that was my intro, and I'm back. I'm on fire, baby. These are morsels. Put so them in your brain. Put so your today, headphones on, B. I'm in there whispering to you. Do it.
Today, we are going to talk about Catch 22.
We want to talk about a song ska that was stuck in Maddie's head that he couldn't tell me what it was.
Yes. I had it stuck in my head for weeks, and I sang it to Scotty, okay? And he didn't hear it.
You were trying to sing me, like, the horn part. Or something.
No, I was trying to sing you the my da 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 ba da 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 da, but because I didn't know the words.
When they come for me, I'll be sitting
yes,
on my desk.
But I sang you that part.
And a bulletproof vest, singing why na ba ma ma na 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 na. And this is how you do it. You go.
I don't even know if people listening can hear you.
Can they hear? I just nailed it, dude. Like, hey, homeboy from Streetlight Manifesto. Like, if y'all need a whistler, hit me up. I know all the songs off your albums. That goes for everybody. Less Than Jake, you need a whistler. Against All Authority, you need a whistler.
Mustard. Can you imagine plug, how I know sick you that would be?
Call me
if,
up.
Like, can you imagine? I just want you to imagine this, okay? So, you know, like, when, like, some dude from the crowd takes the mic from the hardcore vocalist and just nails a verse?
Yeah, that's how I got the gig in Journey.
Yes. So, I think it would be really funny if you got up and grabbed a mic from Catch 22.
From the trombone player.
Just nailed it whistling. Can you even imagine how everyone's minds would be blown?
Yeah, I mean, well, maybe I could get in their ear before the set and get in. That's why I do this podcast, to get a good whistling job. I mean, come on, somebody from Catch 22 is watching this.
We are the official podcast of Mustard Plug.
Oh, that's right. We're the official podcast of Mustard Plug, whose greatest song is named after the greatest beverage, beer, even though the band is named after the greatest condiment. Mustard.
See, I thought when you said that their greatest song was named after the greatest beverage, I thought they had a song called Bubble Tea I'd never heard.
No.
Oh my god, I'm like the most fucking Brooklyn fucking hipster ever.
Is Bubble Tea big out there? I mean, I fucking spent 10 years in San Francisco, and my neighborhood where we lived, the Sunset District, probably had more bubble tea per capita than just about any place in the United States, I would guess.
That's my dream, man. I'm like a bubble tea fucking hound. But all this being said, so what I want was
Mr. Smiley's a really good song by Mustard Plug. Thigh High Nylons. Ooch. Bobby Socks. No. Thigh High Nylons is sick. Mr. Smiley murdered people, but he got a fun name. Who'd have thought? Who knew?
So, okay, so what we're going to talk about was Catch-22.
I want to tell you, my experience from the ground when that record came out.
Yeah, there was a good story here.
Now, in the 90s, singles weren't just sold at the mall out from the single. There was also a thing called snippet tapes. These were big in hip hop, but they were also big in other genres of music. It would be like a single in one of those O cards, and it might have like one full song, and then it would have like 30 seconds of like four other songs, the snippets of the song. So that was the snippet tape. Early on in my band and recording career, we used to go grab a whole box of snippet tapes from like, cause they'd go be at like Amoeba Records, like big labels would just send boxes of them to record stores and they would just be like sitting out for you to grab. And we would grab like whole boxes of them. And that's how I learned how to use a four track, was with these snippet tapes, just cause we had endless tapes to just keep recording and practicing and doing stuff like that. And I think we even released some like taped over tabbed fucking demos and stuff of that over the time. But this isn't about the history of the snippet tape. It's about Catch-22. And so not a lot of ska bands had snippet tapes and promos. I mean, around this time, and I don't know, I'm guessing this is like 1995 or 96, 97 at the latest for Kisabi Nights. I'm not sure. But I'll look it up right now. Hellcat Records was doing tons of promo, right? Like my small town had one high school, but three record stores.
Kisabi Nights is 98.
Oh, 98. Wow. So, okay. So this, because I'm picturing it in Michigan, but so that came out the summer I moved home from California to raise more money to come back and move to San Francisco. So that's how I got the snippet tape, 1998. Okay. Because not a lot of, I was saying like Hellcat and Epitaph had lots of promo stuff at my record stores, but not tapes. They had a lot of posters and stuff like that. When Catch-22 came out, they had a snippet tape. I remember putting it on the car and it was so good. So good, America, that I was suspect. This was on Victory Records, right? And it's like, I'm not a hard, I lean on the punk side of hardcore punk that you guys know. So a punk ska band on Victory, which already at the time had like a dubious reputation, right? And it was so good. It was so well recorded. The horn riffs were so tight. The vocals were perfect. It was so well produced. And they had a snippet tape. I was suspect of this band. Being a young, you know, that's part of being punk is being suspect of anybody else that claims to be punk. We've discussed this before, especially at a young age. But man, it got me. I couldn't deny it. So good. And I'll tell you now, as a grown man who likes to keep his fitness together sometimes, you put on that record and skip rope, baby. Oh. You're skanking that jump rope, baby. You're in that jump rope pit. You're double dutching, bitch.
So here's a Tony Brummel story that you would appreciate.
Tony Brummel, former owner of Victory Records.
Yes.
Label boss, Solidarity.
My friend Andy Patterson, formerly of Inside Out and State of the Nation and Shelter, has told me a few times. He was driving Iceburn, who have a new record coming out, their first in like 20 years. It's fantastic. And Iceburn, and then Tony Brummel got in the car for whatever reason. They were working with him. And Iceburn found out that he had been making merch without telling them, like unapproved designs, right?
For bootlegging a band on your own label. This is why he has that dubious reputation I spoke of.
Yeah. And then they were like driving to the office to like go figure out what they're going to do. And Tony Brummel is in the fucking co-pilot seat in the 15 passenger with Andy driving. And he's crying asking why don't they like me?
Wait, the label head is crying because the band is mad because he's bootlegging a band that signed to his label?
Yes. And then they got there, and I think probably would have been Gentry said, they see all the merch, and Gentry says to Andy, take whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I figured this story was going. So then they take the merch and then just sell it themselves.
I guess that's what ended up happening, yeah. But the point being, Tony Brummel, dubious reputation, put out some good records. My favorite Hard Times headline ever is, oh no, Mom is dating Tony Brummel.
What's Tony Brummel's new label called? Inside Out Music? Is that what, that's what Cro-Mags are on?
No, no.
Or Harley's Cro-Mags are on the new Victory.
Inside Out is a different label.
Okay. What's the, I'm just missing. Like, oh,
Mission,
no, it's
Mission
like,
2. Mission 2Entertainment. 2.
Yeah, Entertainment. Yeah, well, that probably goes well. I don't, who bought Victory? The Orchard or Universal or somebody?
Universal, I think.
What bands got their stuff, what bands got their music back from Victory? A Day to Remember is the most famous one. They won in court and got their shit back. Anybody else get their music back?
I'm not sure.
That you can think of?
Have It Be Worth getting your music back is like kind of tricky.
Well, the thing is like that, it's like, I mean, there's a lot of examples of labels that operate like this, especially from the 90s, right? You give them the rights to everything, right? But they spend, you know, your money, but they spend and spend and spend, and now you have a career, right? You go from a local band to now you're on like Victory or Earache or someone. You've given them all the rights to all your music and a bunch of merch, but they know, they have the capacity and know how to spend your money for you to build a career off that experience, right? I mean, not a lot of bands re-sign to those labels, but when you're able to get, if you're able to get that music back, I mean, fans usually argue that those are your most desirable records, right? Your first three or something, you know? So, sure. I mean, that's just, I don't know where I'm going here. It's just a cautionary tale I guess I was asking who got their stuff back, because yeah, those records are definitely quite valuable. Any band that just, you know, I mean, how many bands on Hellfest next year have been on Victory Records? Like 20 of them, you know?
It's also because there's 300 bands on Hellfest next year.
Yeah. I thought I said we weren't doing more than 4 band shows, but no one told Hellfest.
I'm going to have to be there for that entire thing, and I'm probably going to die. Like, I don't understand how I'm going to survive.
How am I supposed to feel that they booked 350 bands and none of my bands are on it? Wah.
I know.
I'm not going this year. I'm not going next year. We're going in. We're doing the later Summerfest next summer, though.
Sure.
I just got my tour schedule for next year. It's fucking nutters, dude. I might have to get an assistant.
A tour assistant? But,
yeah. Someone who watch movies with my wife a couple nights a week while I'm on the road.
I was going to say, like, an assistant, like, you could be in the, like, tour, you could be in, like, the TM room. You know how, like, nice venues have, like, the TM's office?
If I could just get somebody to, like, wind some cords for me and, like, make sure the batteries in my flashlight are charged.
I mean, I'll just say, I remember the one time on a 10-year cavalry tour that I had a TM office, and I just remember, like, getting completely destroyed in it with all my friends. Like, I was like, oh, shit, they gave me, like, a personal room for me to get wasted in. Sick.
I want to get back to what I was saying, because I think it was interesting. A question to the listeners, or just like a hypothetical to think about. I wonder what, you know, legacy band members that have been on one of like the dubious labels of the 90s, but that also made their career. Like, I don't know, if you're an unsigned band right now, are those deals still desirable right now, Maddie? Do you think? Where, like,
I mean,
the kind of,
to me, they're stuff, desirable, because it's like, look,
yeah,
like,
well, there's still plenty of labels that want to put you in debt and they don't even work for you, they, yeah, just, well, distribute your music. But there's the labels problem. Like that, like some of the most infamous ones are the most infamous because they produced the most hits and the most legacy bands and took young men and women and put them into careers in extreme music, you know?
And that's how a lot of them defend a lot of what happened, right? Is a lot of them will be like, look, maybe I took them for a ride, but also they get to play Hellfest this year and Necrot does not.
Yeah. And then, you know, and but also that, like, here's another thing that came out of that is that, like, then there was like labels, newer labels that spawned after that, like by musicians that like didn't do that. Like, I think Fat Records is a great example of giving bands careers without signing you to a 7-record deal where we own everything for 35 years or something, you know? Or
totally. Yeah. Like, there's definitely people who did a better job.
But I'll tell you the way that those, you know, so I guess that's the thing right now. It's like, I just am not sure who's still going to put the time and energy into your band. So like, we talked about this before, like you asked me a question, like when we were doing one of the episodes about like a label expectations and you were like, what would you say to a band that was like, blow me up, you know, or like make us famous or whatever. And I think my answer was, I think I couldn't think of exactly what to say at first because it was such a weird question I've never heard, but that like you hear all the time. And like my answer would have been like, I'm not going to do that. Like we might do that together, but I'm not doing that, you know, or I'll give you the tools to do it, but it's a lot more your work than my work, you know. But it's like, I mean, I think that Earache still does that, but just with a different genre of music, you know. They've certainly taken some bands that I've never even listened to, but I know who they are, who have gone really far. And Rival I know Sons. The way that they operate and what they really do is just, I mean, they'll put their publicists on tour with you. You know, I mean, that's a lot of bands don't get that kind of attention from their label. You know, and I respect that because nothing makes me feel better than being able to help a band, you know, not have to have another job besides playing in a band, you know, which I've kind of done with one band, you know? So, yeah. But I don't know, man. I think in hindsight, a lot of those bands are like happy for it, but maybe they're, I guess it depends on if you have animosity towards the personalities that run the label still or something like that, you know? Because there's like a lot of hardworking staff behind like the label heads, you know, that are making shit happen. So that's the flip side of the coin of right now is, well, fuck, with Bandcamp and a cassette and a fucking the phone in your pocket, which is just like a megaphone to the world if you know how to use it properly and you have the right message for the people. Where do you go? Where's the healthy medium? You know, so what are the wants and desires of bands?
Let me tell you what I was talking to a couple people the other day about Capra.
Yeah. Okay. So okay. Capra, because Capra had like what was Capra's audience like when you like first started?
They were literally an unsigned band in. Let's start.
And they're from the middle of nowhere.
Let's provide more context. We got to provide more context. Okay. Scotty, stop. So, Capra are a band I signed to Blacklight Media, the Metal Blade subsidiary I do with celebrity chef Chris Santos, who I have a podcast with called Delirious Nomads.
Okay. Good upsell.
And I got you. also, something very weird just happened to me. I'm going to tell you about after the show. So I met this band when I actually had kind of known the main dude Tyler through the hardcore scene somehow for a few years,
but they're from like nowhere.
They're from Lafayette, Louisiana, so which actually has a surprisingly good scene, but like it's definitely not,
it's not on the even the national stage.
Yeah,
really,
it's like one of those scenes where it's like one of those scenes where like the regional market is sick, like if you know type of scenes, you know, the way
got it. And I'm sure bands that like hit every market, like Black Dahlia Murder probably plays there once every 2 years or something.
Yeah, like
a band that hits every single town.
There's markets like that throughout America where it's like, if you know, you know. Lawrence, Kansas is another great example of like,
yeah.
What the fuck? There's good bands in Lawrence, Kansas? Yeah, motherfucker, there's a lot of good bands in Lawrence, Kansas.
Stinking Lincoln, Nebraska, baby. Another great one. Yeah, there's a lot. But at least those two towns are like on the 80s. So it's like, they get a lot of...
Yeah, but
they get
but a lot of regardless, traffic, regardless. Okay.
Irregardless.
They weren't very known. Okay.
No, not at all.
You know, like,
I mean, I think it's fair to say they were like unknown. And then they signed to Metal Blade. Yeah. Like outside of regionally, right?
Yeah. And this is the thing, right? Is like, I don't think they'd ever even played out of state, you know? But here is the thing about them that I was telling, I'm going to do a major name drop here. I was at a party the other night with Brian Slagle, and we were talking about them. Brian Slagle, owner of Metal Blade, discoverer of Metallica.
Friend. Where were you? In New York?
In New York, yeah. Chris's birthday party.
Oh, and, got it. Yeah, that checks out.
And we were talking about them, and I was like, look, here's the thing that's sick about Capra, is that normally I go to a band... And this is in general. This is not me trying to talk shit on Blacklight Media. I think they have a lot of great bands, actually. I'm just talking bands in general, right? I go to a band and I say, hi, here are six really cool ideas. And the band does half of one. Capra, I go, hi, here are six really cool ideas. And they do four.
Yeah, no, those are good. That's a good return on your advice.
You know what I mean?
I know that. I know that as someone who's used to getting that half reply also,
yeah,
even from some of my best friends.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, right? So the fact that Capra has always been willing to be like, okay, so you think we should do this, 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 and this? Okay, well, we think those first three things are cool for us. So we'll do that.
Do you think some of that attitude, that attitude that's a positive to you might come from them from being from such a smaller scene?
Yeah,
even just the ability to take more outside advice than a band who might think they know it all because they like are crushing it in an A market, even though they haven't been out of town.
I think that's part of it. I think they also have, you know, when like scene dudes get sober and then they turn into goddamn monsters, like they just get so good at what, like,
they get so good. Yeah, that's me for 90 days a year when I'm sober. That's when I do all my good work, and then then I just coast on that the rest of the year.
Like Gate Creeper, perfect example of this, right? Like these are guys who were addicts until like 5 years ago, and then they stopped. They took all that addict energy.
They got addicted to a band, which is a great place to put that energy.
100%. You know, like no shame. You know,
not at all.
You know, struggled with a lot of that stuff. You know, whatever. But regardless, like it's like. I think that's a part of it, but I just want to break that down for people. Is that like, I don't even know why how did we start talking about Capra?
We were talking about Catch 22, and I was actually
whistling for a
mustard
while.
Plug.
Okay, no, but basically what I'm trying to say is, So yeah. And so this is the thing, right? Is like, there's a lot of bands who get lost in like the detritus of this whole thing.
Ooh.
Right. Like,
ooh, detritus.
There's a lot of bands who get forgotten, and it's because they got signed to the label and then never fucking did anything. And the label, like, I have so many hours I can dedicate to Blacklight Media in a given week, you know, not just because of what they pay me, but just because of all the other stuff I'm involved in, you know.
And but it's like this. The squeaky wheel gets the grease, right?
Yeah, the people who hustle.
Unless you're already making money for someone, you can't just be an annoying squeaky wheel. The way you squeak is by following the plan.
Yeah. And so when I see Capra hustling and I see them, you know, doing whatever dumb bullshit I told them to do that week and doing it well, you know, and Brian Slagle telling me Capra are really good at social media, me being like, oh my God, I taught them how to use social media. Like I legit almost cried when he was saying nice things to me about Capra. But that's what happens, right? Is you have to think about it from the label guy's perspective, right? Because like at the end of the day, that guy is like, for me, I'm getting paid, but on some level, I have to want to do this project.
Yeah, and the band can make you want to do it by doing things. Like, I mean, we talked about this before. Nothing better than working with a band that says yes to everything.
Yeah, like that.
It just makes your job easier.
Is like, I look at like when I do every day, I probably do. We got to wrap this podcast up. Every day,
no, nah, it's too good, dude. It's too good. This podcast is never gonna end.
I do like I do like 2 or 3 hours of ads, and I like look at like how I prioritize them, and it's always like, what do I do first? It's almost always like, I love doing like the 80s pop bands. I do like, I do Flock of Seagulls and Men at Work and stuff. Like, that's the most fun ever. It's just like sitting there being like, how am I going to sell some Men at Work shirts today?
Well, yeah, you know? But that's also a way different piece. Like, I always like, yeah. I always joke, like, if things are like a little quiet around fucking tank crimes, I just have to post something about dystopia because that's like the red exactly. meat for my base like, to like
yeah,
rattle like, the can and get some excitement going.
Yeah,
and they don't have to do everything. They'll never play a show. They'll never make another song. They'll never do anything, but that's they already have that excitement. Now, a new band does not have that freedom to do nothing and have somebody else want to do it for you.
Yeah.
I mean, with that, yeah. like, you're a great service to that band because they're like signing to Chris Santos's label. So it's like, okay, well, this guy is going to be too busy to hold our hands through everything. And then you're like, we're on Metal Blade, but it's a subsidiary. But I mean, that, you know, like, or like, I mean, does the regular just Metal Blade staff like, just coordinate yeah. all the stuff or yeah. those the production
like,
managers
like, and she like Steph, to. Stephanie was the production manager and she's also the production manager on Cannibal Corpse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. So they don't really inside the offices, it's a Metal Blade release, right?
Yeah.
Got it.
But again, like it's all about just like, are you the band who says yes to things? Are you the band that people are like stoked to work on because it's like, oh, we're gonna do this and they're not gonna whine the whole time.
The other thing is that like, if you like everything like waxes and wanes, and I'm not even talking about your band's popularity. I'm also talking about like your own motivation, right? Or like, especially with a band, like getting like 3 to 6 people all in lockstep, right? With the same yeah. motivation and goals, right? It's really hard. And sometimes, I mean, now that, you know, a lot of the bands I work with, I've worked with for like over a decade, and I just have to get used to the ebb and flow of sometimes everyone's really gung-ho and for a long time. And sometimes everybody needs to take a step back for a minute. And that's why I need multiple projects to work on. So yeah, I can bounce that around.
That's a big part of it. That's like, I routinely think about like, oh, what if I stepped back and only worked on like my big dick shit? And then I'm like, yeah, but oh, then, right.
Well, there's something really satisfying for me to work with different size bands.
Yeah.
And I'm working on like at anything that gets added to the roster in the future, like what I'm looking for personally, and I don't know how this would spread across any other label. I'm looking for a new experience personally, right? Like, I've worked with this band. I've worked with this band. And when I say this band, I'm not even thinking of a specific band. It's like, I've worked with a band with this sound and this capacity and defunct yeah. bands, new bands, active bands, legacy bands. So that's, you know, that's coming from the label side. You just want something new to do. And
yeah, and that's a big part of it.
And so if your band is taking a breath though, and this is like what's is also like the rat race of it, I guess. When your band's taking a breath and the people that help you start working on something else, now you need to like kind of like be strategic about when you're ready to remotivate, right? Because maybe you don't have everyone's attention.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a whole extra conversation to be had here. But this has been a very fun episode.
That was fun. I'm feeling back, dude. Hold on. I want to close out this one.
Oh, okay? I had an idea for how I wanted you to close it out, but go ahead.
Well, in case they weren't listening at the beginning of the show, but they tuned in late.
It's not how podcasts work, Scotty.
I would like to. No, that's exactly how it works.
Okay, I assure you that is not how podcasts work.
I would like to re-audition for Catch 22's reunion, inevitable reunion at Punk Rock Holiday in Slovenia. One of the best festivals in the world. Okay. So how's that song go? Give me back. Give that thing back. Here comes.
There Call you me. Go. This Call has been Scotty Kank Crime Whistling.
Link in bio, baby.
We'll sketch you later.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from niche music podcasts that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers, think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.